Today, SOR.
Now, just in regard to that chat I had with Linda Stapleton and her dad's ordeal, the University Hospital of Limerick's response is that they say they're aware of the issues raised by the patient's family and continues to address them through a complaints process which is ongoing. For reasons of patient confidentiality, it's not appropriate to comment on individual cases. More generally, it's common practice to offer headphones to patients who would benefit from same. This is done under the direction of the surgical and anaesthetic teams. There are no IPNC, that's infection prevention and control, restrictions placed on rehab physio of patients in isolation as long as the appropriate contact precautions and strict hygiene are maintained. Patients in isolation who require physiotherapy are provided with the same quality, frequency and volume of care afforded to patients who are not in isolation. This is often more appropriately delivered at the bedside to reduce any risk of cross-infection, nor is there any restriction on transferring patients in isolation to long-term care facilities. This is a matter for the patients and senior clinical decision makers. CPE positive patients are facilitated for home care packages in the same way as every other patient, that from University Hospital Limerick. Now, let's go back in time to a famous election that went into Irish political folklore for very many reasons. It happened 40 years ago this summer in 1977. That was 2 years before the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was born. A Fine Gael Labour coalition was seeking re-election, arguing that it had steered the country safely through an economic storm caused by an oil crisis and recession. Liam Cosgrave was the outgoing Taoiseach.
Of course, circumstances have changed very dramatically since 1973. You had the massive oil price rise. The interesting thing about it is that the import price index shows a rise of about 109% over the last 4 years, while our domestic price rise has been only 87%, even if you say 90%. In addition, the average industrial wage has gone up by 115%, and old age pensions have increased by 120%, so that average industrial earnings have exceeded substantially the price rise, and so has the position of pensioners and others on welfare.
Now, the voting age at that stage had been reduced from 21 to 18, and Fianna Fáil used Colm Wilkinson to help woo the young vote.
3 years of loneliness, that's just what I've been through. When I left school, I joined my mates, and we all joined the queue. At first it wasn't really bad, we got along together. But after 3 years job hunting, it feels like heavy weather. So let's make it your kind of country. Get out there and vote and show them that you're free. Show them that you care a damn and that you'll win somehow.
The Fianna Fáil election song of 77. Of course, it was the last election in which opinion polls were not taken seriously. Constituencies, of course, had been redrawn by the government in a way that convinced observers the coalition couldn't lose.
I tend to go for the person as well. I take the conventional wisdom of the person who's holding the best hand in this card game, as it were, and that is Liam Cosgrave. Although, I will say this, one politician said to me yesterday, a coalition politician, he said, if Fianna Fáil can pull off this, it's the biggest comeback since Lazarus, and if they do pull it off, who I think most of us agree that the coalition are going to win this, we're going to have to take some stick from Fianna Fáil.
And take stick they did indeed. The incomparable Sean Dignan there on the This Week programme a few days before the election. They brought him and colleagues back the following week when Diggy observed that not only had Lazarus come back, but a lot of his friends had come too. With me now, Professor of Modern Irish History at UCD, Diarmaid Ferreter, and former editor of the Irish Times, Geraldine Kennedy, who covered that election for the paper. Quite an extraordinary election, even though you were a very young man at the time, Diarmaid Ferreter. Even you remember it.
I was all of five. I do remember certain glimpses. I remember Liam Cosgrave being on the television at that time. It was an interesting election because of the media, because newspaper journalists took a much more adversarial approach to the politicians than had been the case previously. And of course, there was a lot going on television, but ultimately not what was suggested by Fianna Fáil, and that was that there would be a head-to-head debate between Liam Cosgrave and Jack Lynch. And Sean if you consider Seamus Brennan at that time, who was just in his early 20s, he was General Secretary of the Fianna Fáil Party, and he brought back an awful lot of ideas from America because he had witnessed the contest between Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter. And that's where we get all this sloganeering and the songs and the badges, Bring Back Jack and the T-shirts and everything else. So the media side of it was interesting. But at the end of it, you mentioned Sean Dignan there. Michael Mills was another political correspondent, and he said, it's over. It's a landslide. How did this happen? And that was the question. How did this happen? And if you consider the advantages that the coalition government had, and people don't appreciate this, I think, that was the longest serving government since the Second World War. It was 4.25 years. And in a way, Cosgrave felt that they had proven a point that coalition governments could work. But some of his colleagues were urging him to wait until the end. And Gareth Fitzgerald argued, as the Minister for Foreign Affairs at that time, if ever there was a case for a government to ride out its full term, it was then.
Arguably, Geraldine, it had been an effective government. It had overseen tumult in Northern Ireland. They had brought forward the Sunningdale Agreement, the power sharing thing that collapsed, dealt with a lot of subversion. But economic times were really, really tough.
The biggest thing that went against them was that you had the oil crisis, and that affected every single person at home. There'd be queues of 100 to 200 people outside garages looking for petrol at an astronomical price, and you'd be very lucky to get it. You might go away after 2 hours without filling the car at all. I think that really annoyed people, and it was from then onwards. That was 1974. It was from then onwards. The private opinion polling that took place at that time was showing Fianna Fáil moving ahead and ahead. But of course, opinion polls weren't published in those particular days. For example, MRBI, which was the Irish Times opinion polling company, they were working for Fine Gael, not the Irish Times at that time. And Fine Gael did no polling. The coalition did no polling before the election at all. And a week after the election, they had their first poll, which showed Fianna Fáil at 59%. And at that meeting, you had Richie Ryan and Gareth Fitzgerald, who were the two that formally commissioned it for the government, Michael O'Leary of Labour, Brendan Halligan of Labour, and the senior Alexis Fitzgerald. And when they heard that Fianna Fáil were at 59, Brendan Halligan turned around and said, "What? Tell me that again now."
Did somebody say at that stage, can we undissolve the Dáil?
Yeah, no, Gareth.
but by the time you came to the last week of the campaign, the interesting thing is the opposite to what we think happened. Fianna Fáil had come back to 51%.
Yes, and I think it was an election in which it was the last one they got over 50% of the popular vote.
It was their most successful result since 1938. Like De Valera, it went just to under 52%. Nobody was expecting that. The interesting thing about polling, it seems very quaint now. Liam Cosgrave was so sceptical about polls. Liam Cosgrave used to read out extracts from letters that he received from people at cabinet meetings. That was how he was gauging public opinion. And they thought this science of polling was to be treated really.
But did you hear the figures he gave out there in that clip we heard? I mean, the industrial wage up in a period and one Dáil term up 115%. And did he say pensions had risen by 120%?
Well, you see, you had Frank Lusky in there as a member of that government, and he was adamant that Labour had to look after its constituency. And in fairness to Cosgrave, he was quite open to that. There were serious increases in welfare, and Fianna Fáil in its manifesto was promising to sustain those increases, but along with a hell of a lot of other problems.
Yes, great giveaway, wasn't it, Geraldine,
It was the great giveaway election. It also was the most professional, and I'm saying this in a good and a bad sense, professionally fought election. You had all the razzmatazz from the US. You had Jack Lynch doing a round country tour. You had the existence of television in a real way that affected things. You had helicopters, and you also had loads of money.
But they
I think it was probably the most expensive election ever fought, because you had Des Hanafan in the Burlington Hotel, room 547, collecting money for Fianna Fáil, doing terribly well with corporate donations. So it's a completely different character of an election.
But it was a 47-page manifesto. And Fianna Fáil was ready for this. Fine Gael was not ready for this at all. A 47-page manifesto costed at about £250 million, which in 1977 was an astronomical sum. And they were promising to abolish rates. They were promising to get rid of most of the motor taxes or car taxes that existed.
£1,000, and it was pounds then, first-time buyer's grant.
And targeting youth unemployment, and remember how important that was.
We heard it there in the song, the words.
You can see it there, but you can see, like, in the archives in UCD, where you have the Fianna Fáil archives, you can see the young Seamus Brennan there jotting down notes, and he has a little note, Fianna Fáil and the youth, a great future together. And they were not only promising these grants for housing and so on, they were also promising that their first priority would be to tackle youth unemployment. And remember, one quarter of the electorate in 1977 was under the age of 26.
Let's go back to our own archives. And on election night, Brian Farrell was RTE's election television ringmaster as it became clear that the government was being trounced.
I'm afraid I have to interrupt again, Prunchier, so I really do apologise, but at this hour of the night, just after 9:15, we have a very important statement from the Taoiseach, Liam Cosgrave, in Dún Laoghaire.
While the results of all the counts are not yet available, the indications are that when the new Dáil meets on the 5th of July next, there will be a change of government. I shall facilitate the smooth transfer of administration to my successor in accordance with the decision of the people.
The successor, meanwhile, in Cork, joy was unconfined at the prospect of Jack coming back.
I'll give you the man who has come to speak to you tonight at his own request, our real Taoiseach.
And you'll all join in. It never goes to sleep. It is wide awake alone, and I'm longing for a peep at the good old Blarney song. Thank you.
Happy times. Of course, during Fianna Fáil's period in opposition, the arms crisis of 1970, when three ministers were sacked, continued to echo. It became a feature of some of the debate in that election campaign. Jack Lynch had been strongly criticised for restoring Charles Haughey to his own front bench.
I don't think so, because after all, he has shown himself to be a very able and stable front bench member. He has completely subscribed to the Fianna Fáil policies, and I think it's purely malicious. I don't believe the people will go for it. And I believe that Mr. Haughey will get a massive vote in his own constituency to indicate that the people don't accept it.
And Geraldine, you were covering that election count on the night as it happened.
I was covering the election count in the RGS, the Dublin constituencies. And they were all on different floors. And you might be covering three constituencies. You'd write it out on a sheet of paper, go to the telephone and phone the Irish Times. There were no other phones at the time. But there was one television in the RDS on the bottom floor, and I used to run down there every chance I had in between counts to see what was happening nationally. And towards the very end, I was standing behind Charles Haughey, who was sitting watching the television, right? And he said, "Isn't it great?" And I said, "I don't know what you're so happy about." I said, "Jack Lynch is on his way now, apparently, to a 20-seat majority." And he said, "Yes, but you don't realise they're all my people. Now I know I'll be leader." And when you look at who was elected, there were 28 new Fianna Fáilers elected. And among them, you had Bertie Ahern for the first time, Pádraig Flynn, Liam Lawler, Charlie McCreevy, Albert Reynolds, and Sheila de Valera.
It's quite an extraordinary intake, right enough,
Jim Mitchell for Fine Gael, Rory Quinn.
Martin O'Donoghue.
Some very interesting characters there. But P. Flynn just caused amazement when he arrived up to take his seat in the Dáil, because he was wearing a white flowing suit with a polka dot shirt, and he really stood out. And Jack Lynch caught a glimpse of him and said, "Who in the name of God is that?" Haughey was earthier and said, "Would someone tell that effing clown that this is the Dáil and not a circus?" But there's something in that, though. There's something in that, you know, Lynch didn't know a lot of these new TDs, and that was going to become very problematic because he made no effort to get to know them.
But he did. And Geraldine, you made a, I suppose you might say, a prescient request to
I said to
the
me
then deputy for Dublin. It was a Dublin Artane at the time, Charles Haughey.
He said, "Now I know I'll be elected, right?" And he said, "You don't believe me." Oh, I said, "You must give me your first interview." And he said, "I will." So then he
As
got
Taoiseach.
Yes. So then he got elected leader of Fianna Fáil and Taoiseach at the beginning of December. And from the minute Frank Dunlop was his press secretary. was the government press secretary. I got on to Frank and I said, could I ever meet the Taoiseach, please? He's promised me his first interview. And Frank just laughed at me. So I kept at it. And I went home then for Christmas down to Carrick and Shore. And when I came back up, Frank Dunlop was on to me. The minute my car arrived in the door, Frank Dunlop was on and said, Taoiseach would like to see you now. And I went into the hall and Frank said, look, I just want to tell you, you're not getting the interview. He's just going to be nice to you and do the decent thing and tell you it face to face. I said, grand. So I went up to see him and all that. And I was sitting in a chair with the sort of arms on it and all that. And he said, I couldn't possibly, I just want to tell you that I couldn't, I did promise it to you, but I couldn't possibly give you the interview, he said. I'd get into terrible trouble, he said. They'd all be saying, why, they'd all, look at what people would be saying about you. I mean, he said, I have a reputation for women. And I said, well, I look after that. You needn't worry about that. And then he said, well, I have to give it to people who helped me on the way up. And people who supported me were good to me. People like Vincent Brown, right? And Michael Hand, right? And I said, OK. So I took up my bag from the side of the thing and went to walk out. And he says, he turned around, he says, come back here a minute. What do you think now? And I said, well, I said, sure, now I know that what they all say about you is true. You're a liar. And he said, sit down there now. So he says, OK, how am I going to explain to people that I've given you this interview? I went back down to Frank Dunlop.
You gave as good as you got. There's no doubt about that, Miss Kennedy.
I went down to Frank, back down. And Frank saying, I'm terribly sorry about that, child. And I said, Frank, you're to arrange it now, please.
Yeah, and interestingly, you mentioned Frank Dunlop. He was the guy who transitioned. He was Jack Lynch's, first of all, he was the Fianna Fáil press secretary, Jack Lynch's right-hand man with the media, became a government press secretary and managed to stay on in that capacity with Charles Haughey. He had worked. In fact, it's one of the best books I think ever.
Oh, there's great anecdotes in it.
Yes, it's very funny.
It's very funny.
It didn't sell particularly well because I think Dunlop's reputation.
Yeah, he was in trouble at the time. But the interesting thing, I suppose, is that it is a period of transition. You're moving to a concentration on focus groups and on spin doctoring. And there were three key individuals there. We mentioned Seamus Brennan, General Secretary. There was Frank Dunlop, Press Secretary. There was Esmond Smith, who headed up the research centre. Fianna Fáil was extraordinarily well organised.
Yeah, but what
and
comes
through,
Jim, in that book by Dunlop is the contemptuousness of Haughey towards the Fianna Fáil manifesto that was drawn up.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He derided it, and rightly so, because, I mean, most economists derided it as well. It was quite clear the government couldn't afford it. This had been concocted by Martin O'Donoghue, because Jack Lynch seemed to believe that his business was not really the business of policy or manifestos. And the idea was that they would borrow heavily and that they would expand the economy and the resulting revenues would generate buoyancy. It all went horribly wrong and ultimately resulted in a national debt of about 10 billion. And T.K. Whittaker at the time, very interestingly, and we should remember this because he was governor of the central bank and he refused to go for a second term on the grounds that he couldn't go. It would be seen as condoning these policies that he thought were an absolute disgrace.
The nature of the manifesto is one thing that proves that Fianna Fáil didn't think they'd do anything as well as they did in the election.
Yeah.
I think it's very important looking back because it is a sort of historic election with an extraordinary result that will never be repeated again. It's brought about the end of one party government. We've never had it since. It was the second biggest absolute majority ever. Because of all of that, I think it's very important to realise the surprise that the result was to people. It all looks so pig-patted.
Yeah, and you were talking a few minutes ago, and I want to go back to the last clip we have from the archive about how they promised to deal with youth unemployment. And in a famous interview, or maybe infamous interview, with Mike Burns, Jack Lynch, as Taoiseach then, he was in office for a period, he gave an infamous hostage to fortune.
If there are 100,000 unemployed at the end of your term of office, you think the electorate would be right to put you out of office?
Absolutely. And I think they'd be only well justified if there are that many. I think we have now a much more volatile electorate than we ever had before. And I believe that the big majority we got was because there was a volatile electorate who were no longer hung up on the old slogans and the old commitments and the old loyalties. Therefore, if we don't deliver, then the electorate are entitled to put us out of office.
But Fine Gael also learned from that election because Gard Fitzgerald was poised to take over. Liam Cosgrave was young at that time. He was only 57. He's 97 now. And he, you know, some people thought he might hold on. But Fitzgerald said, we as a party did not know where we were going. And they subsequently borrowed many of the tactics of the campaigning that had been witnessed on the part of Fianna Fáil in 1977.
Well, they professionalised head office
They had a dreadful song in 1981.
They did, Let's Go with Garrett and all that kind of thing. But when you look at, like, we heard Cosgrave earlier on conceding. At the very time that he was doing that, Oliver J. Flanagan, who had been Minister for Defence and was one of the Cosgrave loyalists in that government, he was writing him a private personal letter. And he said, there's no room in Irish politics for honesty and sincerity. It pains me to write this. But he then referred to an ungrateful people. And a lot of them suffered from that arrogance and that sense that this was an ungrateful electorate who couldn't be trusted.
And nobody saw the ingratitude and felt it more intensely than the Labour Party at that stage, Gerard.
That's right. They went down 2% of the vote and I think they lost two seats. I mean, they didn't do too badly, no. But what happened was...
the individuals, though.
But they were in the infighting. Really,
yeah, but it was a star-studded government. That's another thing that was very different about that national coalition. We've never had one like it. You had Justin Keating, you had Michael O'Leary, you had Garrett Fitzgerald,
The cruiser, right.
How would they all live together in the one cabinet bed? I just don't know. I mean, Ian Cosgrave must have been an absolutely wonderful chairman of a cabinet.
Wasn't it as well, though, that Brendan Corrish was leader of the Labour Party and Cosgrave got on very well. And if you have a look at the start of the campaign, you mentioned Brendan Halligan earlier on. He said to Corrish and to Cosgrave, walk down streets together. Don't talk about politics, just chat. The two of you exude a sense of reassurance. You're both essentially conservative individuals, but that's what people need right now. And they had that rapport, the two of them. Now, it wasn't enough, obviously, but you've also got to factor in the constituencies and the redrawing of the boundaries, because that all went horribly pear-shaped. The idea was, without getting into all the technicalities, if you reduced a lot of four-seat constituencies to three-seat constituencies, that the coalition parties with just over 50% of the vote would have a good chance of taking two of those three seats. It didn't work out like that at all. And Fianna Fáil and Jack Lynch thought that they were snookered because of this as well. But it didn't
turn
out.
And they even
put
a four-seater in West Galway for Michael D's benefit, but he failed.
He failed for all sorts of reasons. There were rows going on at that time about family planning, believe it or not. And there were fierce rows going on about a family planning clinic in Galway. And of course, Michael D. Higgins, as a liberal, as a radical, was associated with that cause. And he and some of his colleagues were accused by a more conservative group at that time who were campaigning against them of spreading VD all over Connacht. And that was the kind of language that was being used at that time about these kind of social questions.
Had the contraception bill introduced by that government as well, which sort of Liam Cosgrave did what you might now call a Merkel on it and voted against his own government, right?
And to what extent were Fine Gael and Labour, the outgoing government, were they hampered or at least at a disadvantage as a result of the lampooning they were getting? Was it from Hall's Pictorial
Weekly? There's no doubt about that because the portrayal of Jack Lynch in Hall's Pictorial Weekly was the kind of benign pipe-smoking individual, and for the others you had Richie Roon, you know, and the Minister for Hardship. And I mean, that certainly did, but we can exaggerate that too.
Yeah. Extraordinary times, an extraordinary election. Thank you for your insights and recollections. Dermot Ferrer, Professor of Modern Irish History at UCD, and Geraldine Kennedy, former editor of the Irish Times. Thank you both. News headlines after these. Today with